I was only there a couple of minutes when Philip smashed my car window and dragged me out, and then...
Wait, what? Philip?
He asked. In the background, I heard the sharp jingle of keys and scuffling noises that were likely him shoving shoes on. Yes, Philip, I snapped, muscles tensing as the anger seeped in again. The asshole zombie I made. And he was hurting bad, and I wanted to kiss his goddamn boo-boos and make him better. What the hell was that all about?
Right, sorry. Then what?
I clenched my unbroken hand. Oh, and then the fun shit happened. He and another zombie held me down for a chick to take my blood. There was another guy there, too. Human. Motherfucker broke my hand. After they were done, Philip used a trank dart to knock me out, and I woke up a little bit ago, back in my car.
Jesus Christ.
He breathed.
Okay, I'm coming. Just stay put.
Not going anywhere, I said with a scowl I could feel down to my core. Whatever he did to me made me real weak and shaky. Not safe to drive. I glanced down at my broken hand. And I need brains. Sorry. I was on my way home and didn't put it in the car.
No worries, babe,
he said, though there was no mistaking the worry in his voice.
I already have some for you.
His truck engine roared to life in the background.
I'll be there in 5 minutes.
Thanks. See you then, I said, managing a tired smile as I dropped the phone back into my purse. Damned good guy. Yet my smile faded as I remembered my reaction to Philip. Kiss his boo-boos and make them better? I remembered it, but didn't feel it anymore. Weird. In the moment, I'd sure felt it. Then it hit me. Kiss his boo-boos and make them better. Like a mother and child. I'd turned him into a zombie, chewed brains and fed them to him like a mother bird, protected him from Cherish in his first hours. What the shit? Was the bizarre compassion some sort of parasite-influenced zombie mama instinct? It sure as hell made more sense than anything else. An unnatural cold settled in my bones, accompanied by another wave of weakness, and I gave up pondering the weirdness surrounding my horrible zombie baby. Probably an after-effect of the damn trank, I figured. However, when Marcus's truck screeched to a stop beside my car, I managed to gather enough energy to fling the door open and stagger out. Marcus reached me in a brains-fueled instant, wrapped his arms around me, and pulled me close.
God, you're soaking wet,
he murmured.
Come on, let's get you warmed up.
Supporting me, he steered me to his truck, got me in, and then tucked a blanket around me. My lips twitched in mild amusement as I saw that it was the blanket we'd had sex on at the stadium. God, that seemed like an eternity ago. He gave my thigh a comforting squeeze, reached to crank up the heat, then pressed a bottle into my hand.
Drink up,
he urged.
You need it.
Then he surprised me by pulling a towel, plastic sheeting, and duct tape from behind the seat.
I'll get your window covered.
You're the best, I told him, totally meaning it.
You bring it out in me, Angel,
he said, with a smile and eyes full of a warmth that did more to chase away my chill than the blanket. His gaze dropped to the bottle.
Drink,
he repeated, then closed the door and turned away to attend to my car. I wasn't all that hungry, but I knew my unhealed injuries needed brains. I opened the bottle and lifted it to drink, but my stomach gave an odd lurch and a revolting smell. Frowning, I lowered it without taking a sip. Had to be something wrong with it. A few minutes later, Marcus climbed into the driver's seat, placed my phone and purse on the seat between us. He glanced at the full bottle in my hand, and worry darkened his eyes.
Babe, you need to drink all of that,
he said gently, with a light touch to the back of my injured hand. Can't. I made a face and shook my head. They don't smell right, I said. I think they're spoiled. He frowned and took the bottle from me, sniffed, and then sipped.
No, they're good. Your taste must be a little off.
He handed the bottle back to me.
Angel, you need to make yourself drink.
I held my breath and forced myself to take a few swallows, then shuddered. Oh, God, that's really awful. His gaze dropped to the abrasions on the back of my hand.
Well, you're healing, but damn, a lot more slowly than normal.
Frowning, I peered at my hand. Maybe it's because of whatever knocked me out. My frown deepened as I looked over at him. I mean, it really knocked me out. totally unconscious, even though it wasn't for very long. It was only now hitting me how very odd that was. When I got drunk before, it didn't do that. McKinney, Dr. Cherish's muscle, had tranked me from a distance when I'd exchanged myself for my dad. McKinney's trank dropped me and I couldn't move, I continued. But I was awake the whole time. Not necessarily coherent, since I was crazed with brain hunger, but certainly awake. And it didn't make me feel weak afterwards like I do now. Marcus exhaled.
Let's get you back to the house, then I'll call Uncle Pietro.
He glanced my way.
Keep trying to finish that bottle if you can. It's doing some good, even if slowly.
I took slow, grimace-laden sips as we drove. But to my relief, the yuck level began to decrease, and by the time we reached his house, I'd sucked down the last of the bottle and wanted more. My hand wasn't completely healed up, but it was well on the way, and the overwhelming weakness had faded to a much more normal tiredness. What was up with that, along with the brains being near revolting at first and damn tasty now? It had to be something to do with the tranquilizer and its effects wearing off. Marcus got me inside his house and found some vastly oversized sweats for me to change into, since my own clothes were still wet. After that, he shepherded me to the couch, wrapped a blanket around me, then snuggled up next to me. Thanks, hon, I said as I nestled close. This was the protective side of Marcus I adored.
We need to tell my uncle,
Marcus said. Yeah, I sighed and leaned my head on his shoulder. You do it. I'm too tired to deal with him. He kissed the top of my head.
Not a problem.
I closed my eyes while he dialed, listened with half an ear while he told Pietro about the attack, the blood draw, the trank, my weakness, slow healing, and temporary distaste for brains. After that, Marcus fell silent, broken only by the occasional right and okay and I will. When he finally hung up and set the phone aside, I opened my eyes, gave him a smile. I'm feeling a lot better, I said. Thanks.
You look a lot better,
he said, with less of the worry that had tightened his voice before. Is it okay if I spend the night here tonight? I asked. A smile spread across his face.
You'd have had to wrestle me to get out the door.
I let out a tired laugh. There's also the fact that my car is still in the Walmart parking lot. I kissed him. But mostly, I'd really like you to hold me for a long time. He let out a breath of relief, kissed me back.
I can totally do that.
He paused.
There's pudding in the fridge, but only if you're interested.
I smiled. I think I'm hungry again. Chapter 12
Babe.
I mumbled and rolled over.
Hey, babe.
The voice insisted on continuing to speak. Marcus, waking me up. Damn him.
I'm sorry, but I have to leave in 10 minutes.
He went on.
I work day shift, and I have roll call at 6 a.m.
Cracking an eye open, I peered at the clock. 5:15? You're kicking me out? I mumbled. Marcus chuckled softly.
Hell no, he said. You can stay here all day, but if you want me to give you a ride back to your car, you need to get up.
Crap. Yeah, my car was still in the Walmart parking lot. I briefly debated staying in bed and then finding another way to retrieve the damn thing, but I couldn't think of anyone else I wanted to bug for a ride or tell what had happened, and I sure as hell didn't want to cough up cash for a taxi. Reluctantly, I opened both eyes. Marcus was dressed and ready to go in his sheriff's office uniform. It was a somewhat ordinary gray shirt and dark blue pants, but Marcus had his shirts tailored to better fit the V-taper of his lats, and the polyester pants hugged his firm butt quite nicely. Add the whole duty belt and air of authority, and the man frickin' oozed sexy. Fine, I grumbled. I forced myself to roll out of bed, took the clothing that Marcus held out for me, same clothing I'd had on the day before, but clean and dry now, I noted. Marcus could be pretty damn awesome. Well, except for waking me up at oh fuck in the morning. I managed to dress without too many complaints, and Marcus drove me in his police car to Walmart. To my surprise, he got out when I did, opened the trunk of his car, and pulled out a handheld vacuum.
"Don't want you sitting on glass," he said with a smile,
and I proceeded to watch in bemused delight as he vacuumed up all the broken glass that littered the interior of my car. "You just earned yourself some sexual favors," I told him after he finished.
He laughed. "Do you work today?"
"Nope. I think it's going to be a clean the kitchen and study my ass off day." I wrinkled my nose. "I know how to party."
"Sounds like fun," he said with a mild shudder. "I'll call you when I get off work."
"You'd better." He kissed me, then watched as I started my car and drove off. I glanced back in the rearview mirror as he climbed back into his cruiser. Yeah, maybe it was time for us to officially become boyfriend-girlfriend. Hell, everyone assumed we were already, and he'd sure as hell come through for me last night. I made it home to a dark house, with only my dad snoring to break the silence. I had texted him before going to bed last night to let him know I wouldn't be in, and not to worry. He never responded, so he was either annoyed that I spent the night with Marcus, or too busy drinking, or whatever the hell else he was doing. Screw it. I had a feeling I'd be spending a lot more nights away from home. For a brief moment, I considered going right back to bed, but by this point, I was pretty damn awake. Exerting a bit of maturity, I spread my books out on the kitchen table and settled down to work through a practice GED test. That killed a couple of hours, but I managed to pass it by the skin of my teeth and rewarded myself with a mental high five. Yet my euphoria faded as the memory of the previous night's fun and games rose again. Hell, this whole week had been weird, with the attack at the boat launch being the shit-flavored ice cream on top of the crazy pie. Though it had been less than 36 hours, it seemed like forever since I was out on the rain-soaked highway with Heather and facing down the company men. Was she still recovering all right? Was the Saberton Corporation still looking for her? Jeez, it's corporate espionage on steroids. And brains. I sat back and considered the various connections, then abruptly remembered that I'd planned to call Pietro about Kang's head. The clock over the stove read 9:05, a more than reasonable hour to call. Before I could lose my nerve, I pulled my phone from my purse and dialed Pietro's number. To my surprise, he picked up on the first ring.
"Hello, Angel. How are you doing this morning? I was just thinking about you."
Hi, Pietro, I said, trying to recover from the mild shock that he had my number in his contacts. "Better. All the weird weakness is gone, and I feel pretty much my normal self."
"Good. Glad to hear it," he said, sounding like he actually meant it. "How can I help you?"
Crap. I probably should have rehearsed what I was going to say before calling and sounding like a moron. I was calling to find out if there's been any progress with the heads. It had been 6 months since his people recovered the zombies' heads from Dr. Cherish's lab at NewQuest Corps, heads of zombies Ed had killed.
"You mean with regrowth?"
he asked, again surprising me by actually knowing what the hell I was talking about. I could be talking about heads of cauliflower for all he knew. "Well, yeah," I said. "Is anything happening? I haven't heard any news and, well, Kang was sort of a friend of mine, and I'd really like to be kept in the loop."
"The regrowth itself hasn't been attempted yet," Pietro informed me. "It will be as soon as the right medium is developed."
"Right medium?" I asked, puzzled. "You mean what to grow them back in? Why can't you just put them in a big vat of brains?"
"According to one who knows far more about this than I do," he said, "a big vat of brains wouldn't be sufficient. Coming back from a head alone isn't exactly natural. Christy Cherish was on the right track when using the pseudo-brain mix to regrow Zeke Lines, but she hadn't tested it thoroughly, and, as you know, the results were tragic. Finding the right formula is proving challenging, but we're getting closer."
"Oh, all right." Disappointment curled through me, but I also understood. Zeke Lines was one of Ed's decapitation murder victims, but when he was regrown, he came back all screwed up, appearing at least 20 years older, and with a parasite that couldn't heal the damage from the closed head injury he sustained after a fall down a flight of stairs. I resisted the urge to sigh. So much for getting answers from Kang, at least anytime soon. Will you please let me know once you have any news?
I will,
Pietro said.
But perhaps you'd like to get some direct answers. Maybe even see the head yourself.
I sucked in an excited breath. Seriously?
Completely,
he replied, and I thought I heard a smile in his voice at my delight.
We did lose one, but the others are relatively stable.
I would love to see the heads. Then I bit my lip. Wait, which one did you lose? Please don't say it was Kang's.
No, Kang is stable. It was Peter Plesha.
I racked my memory for which one that was. Oh, yeah, the pizza guy. Oh, whew. I mean, not great for him, but... Well, you know. I made a face at my own idiocy. Anyway, so when can I go and see them? Pietro chuckled.
It's all right. I know what you meant. Do you work today?
A thrill of anticipation ran through me. No, I'm off today. Work tomorrow, then off again on Saturday, but I have the GED that morning.
I'll have Brian pick you up at noon today at your place, he said. Will that work for you?
Holy crap. Brian Archer, Pietro's hard as nails head of security. Sure, I said quickly.
You will be meeting with Dr. Ariston Nikas. He heads up all of my research and development operations. He'll be able to answer your questions much more thoroughly than I can.
Oh, my God. I was going to get to visit a research lab? A zombie research lab? That is so cool, I breathed. Thanks.
You're welcome, Angel, he replied warmly. By the way, apart from your ordeal last night, I heard you were in a pretty serious firefight the night before. Are you doing all right? Do you need anything?
No, I'm cool, I said, weirdly touched at the concern. Your people gave me some stuff on the scene, and I gulped. Well, I ate a bad guy. I killed someone, and ate his brain. Sure, he'd been shooting at me, but a shiver ran through me. It shouldn't have been so easy for me to do it. I'd killed McKinney when I was escaping from Cherish's damn lab, but that was different. McKinney was a grade-A bastard asshole, and general all-around bad person who'd done terrible things to me, and to people I cared about. I'd felt zero guilt when I smashed his head and feasted on the contents. But the guy the other night, just because he was working for the other side didn't necessarily mean he was dipped in sin. Hell, I knew damn well that Pietro's hands weren't clean. My shoulders hunched forward, and my chest tightened as guilt swept in. What the hell kind of monster was I? Maybe Pietro sensed my attack of sudden remorse. When he replied, his tone was surprisingly mild.
You made a decision in the heat of the moment. I've heard the reports. If you hadn't taken him out and utilized the resources he had to offer, Heather would likely be dead now, and those men would have certainly captured you.
Right, I said softly. He was right. I knew that logically, but I also knew I'd probably never shake that sliver of guilt. And that was probably a good thing. If I didn't feel some guilt and shame, then I really would be a monster. It's kind of hard to get used to, though I guess you know that.
Yes, I do, he replied. But killing him was a matter of survival for you. And as far as eating him goes, you'd have eaten his brain without hesitation had his body been in the morgue, yes? It's simply a different setting.
Yeah, I said, subdued. I'm having a little trouble adjusting to the whole being a killer thing. He exhaled.
Maybe we can discuss this more later, when things settle down a bit.
He replied, tone gentle.
My people will be occupied for a few days with the aftermath of your encounters with Saberton. But after that, we should talk.
I hesitated. I still didn't fully trust him, not by a long shot. And the quick and efficient response to the highway incident had shown me quite clearly that Pietro was, well, when I'd half joked about him being the head of the zombie mafia, I'd probably been underestimating his power and reach. But I had no doubt he had a lot more experience with dealing with the aftermath of killing someone. And it wasn't as if I had a whole lot of other people I could spill my guts to. I couldn't exactly go to a therapist and say, the thing is, I'm having some guilt issues over the fact that I'm a brain-eating murderer. That would be great,
I heard myself saying.
Excellent. I'll tell Dr. Nika she'll be coming by shortly after noon.
Thanks, I said. I'll be ready. I hung up, shaking my head at the awkwardness of my goodbye.
But then I laughed.
A year ago, I was a drugged-out felon shacking up with my loser boyfriend, Randy. In a couple of hours, I was going to see zombie heads in a secret lab owned and operated by the head of the local zombie mafia. Sometimes life was pretty damn funny.
Chapter 13.
I told myself I'd study until 11, which would give me enough time to get ready so I wouldn't be in a frantic rush before Brian picked me up. At least that was the plan. I ended up getting caught up in a practice test, and when I looked up, it was 11:30, and then, of course, I had a frantic rush to get ready in time. Fortunately, I was an expert on running late, so by 10 till noon, I was showered, had my hair dried, with most of the frizz tamed, and even had a bit of makeup on. I put on the same pants I'd worn to the gala, but this time paired it with a simple shirt that wasn't at all skanky, and my regular low lace-up boots. I'd briefly considered wearing the same heeled boots that I'd worn the other night, then decided that comfort and sure footing was probably the better choice for a research lab. I wouldn't want to trip and knock something crucial over, land in a bizarre cocktail of chemicals, and end up some sort of freak mutant, right? I laughed at myself as I dabbed on a touch of lip gloss. I was already freaky enough, thank you very much. And I've also been watching way too many science fiction movies with Marcus. My dad stumbled out of his bedroom wearing only a pair of ragged boxers while I prowled the kitchen in search of something to eat. He grunted something at me and continued right on past to the bathroom. I rolled my eyes, annoyance winding through me as I stuck a burrito into the microwave. By the time the microwave dinged and I had the burrito on a plate, he shuffled back into the kitchen. "Afternoon, Dad," I said. I figured it was close enough to noon that I could be snarky about the time of day. He mumbled something that might have been an answer as he scrabbled through the pantry.
"Damn it, Angel, we're out of coffee."
"I'll pick some up later," I said around a mouthful of two chewy tortilla and cheese. "There's some Cokes in there," I shrugged. "At least it's caffeine." His scowl deepened into familiar lines as he pulled a can of Coke out of the pantry and popped the tab.
"You should have gotten coffee yesterday."
He took a swig of warm soda and gave me an accusing look as if it was my fault that warm Coke sucked compared to coffee. I took the time to chew and swallow more burrito before answering.
"I didn't know we were out," I finally said. "And I was working, you know, for the money that buys the coffee." "I buy things around here too, damn it," he growled, then let out a low belch.
I bit back a retort that I knew damn well would start a fight.
"So you going anywhere tonight?" I asked instead. "Why the hell do I have to get the third degree in my own goddamn house?" he shot back. "I may go out, may not. None of your goddamn business."
So much for not starting a fight.
"Jesus, Dad, I'm just trying to have a fucking conversation," I said. Why the hell did he have to be so goddamn ornery all the time?
"You've hardly been home at all most evenings." He got a cold hot dog out of the fridge, wrapped it in a piece of white bread.
"Maybe I have things to do, and you're one to talk after staying out all night."
He took a bite, then looked over at me as if focusing on me for the first time. His eyes narrowed.
"Looks like you're going out again, with that cop."
"No, it's not Marcus," I said, then had to mentally fumble for what the hell to tell him. Zombie head tour at a secret lab probably wouldn't go over too well. "I have a meeting, sort of job interview," I lied.
"Badly."
He leaned toward me, frowning.
"You get fired?"
"What? No." I shook my head. "This is mostly a tour, that's all." I jumped at a sudden knock on the door. Crap, Brian was here, and my dad. I groaned under my breath. "Could you maybe put on some pants?"
"Oh, for the love of... It's my goddamn house."
He scowled as he stalked to the window and tweaked the curtain back. I heard him breathe a low curse, and I looked over his shoulder to see a very official-looking black Escalade with heavily tinted windows in the driveway, and on the porch, the equally official-looking Brian, dressed in a dark suit and wearing sunglasses and a Bluetooth headset.
"Who the fuck is that, Angel?"
He let the curtain drop and rounded on me. I hissed a whisper.
Jesus, Dad, he can hear you.
I swallowed down the last bite of burrito and grabbed my purse. Hang on, I called toward the door, then looked back at my dad.
He, works at the lab. He's giving me a ride, that's all.
My dad glowered at me as he crossed his spindly arms over his thin, bare chest.
You've sure taken up with some folks that aren't our kind, Angel.
Something flickered in his eyes, but I couldn't tell if it was anger or worry.
You better watch yourself.
I'm fine, I muttered, then waved a hand at him to at least get behind the counter so that his underwear wasn't visible. He rolled his eyes and grudgingly complied, but continued to cast dark looks my way as I yanked the door open. I gave Brian a bright smile.
Hi!
With the sunglasses over his eyes, I couldn't tell if Brian was looking past me and taking in the general state of my house and my dad, but I had no doubt he was doing exactly that. Though if he found any aspect of it disgusting or amusing, it didn't show at all in his face. Instead, he simply gave me a slight nod.
Good morning, Miss Crawford, he said, voice as calm and smooth as ever. Are you ready?
Sure am, I replied, giving him an overly bright smile. I glanced back. Bye, Dad.
Whatever,
my dad grumbled. I kept the smile plastered onto my face as I exited and closed the door. Brian opened the umbrella he carried and held it over me through the light drizzle as we headed for the Escalade, then surprised the hell out of me by opening the passenger door. I climbed in, barely managing to hold back a sigh of pleasure at the buttery soft feel of the leather seats. He closed the door and came around to get into the driver's seat.
It's about a half-hour drive, ma'am, he told me as he started the engine and began to pull out of the driveway. Feel free to put on some music you like.
I didn't have the faintest clue how to work the radio or satellite thing or whatever the hell it was. Fortunately, it was already playing what appeared to be classic rock at a volume that still allowed conversation.
This is fine, I said.
If it had been opera or jazz or anything weird, I'd have had to figure the damn thing out for my own sanity. Brian turned onto the highway, then opened the console and pulled out a packet like the ones he'd given me at the gourmet gala.
Can always use a bit more, ma'am, he said with a slight smile, holding it out for me.
Oh, sure. Thanks, I said, taking it from him. I tend to hoard and ration out my own stash as much as possible. I tore the top off and did my best to suck the contents down as genteelly as possible. What was the proper etiquette for brain eating? Pinky up? No slurping sounds? A dainty belch at the end?
Understandable, he replied. And you have an adequate stash?
As long as nothing goes wrong, I have enough to last me about 3 months if I lost my job tomorrow, I told him with more than a little pride. It hadn't been easy to build my supply up to that level. He flicked a glance toward me.
That's impressive planning.
I've been hungry before, I said softly, looking out the window. Pine trees and horse farms flicked by as we drove. We seemed to be taking mostly back highways, which made for nicer scenery. It scared the hell out of me, I continued. I don't want to hurt anyone. I pushed away the image of the baseball bat splitting open the Saberton man's head. Brian took a deep breath and released it slowly.
An ever-present danger for us. He paused. Mr. Ivanov told me you had an unpleasant encounter last night.
I swallowed hard.
Yeah, fun times with Philip and a couple of his pals.
I'm sorry, ma'am, he said with a shake of his head. It must have been quite traumatic.
I glanced his way. Look, I really appreciate all the courtesy stuff, but is there any way you could just call me Angel? I gave him an apologetic smile. The ma'am thing feels sort of, well, weird. Sorry.
No problem with that at all, Angel, Brian replied, slight smile touching his mouth.
I let out a small sigh of relief. Thanks. And yeah, it was traumatic, but at the same time, it was hardly anything compared to some of the other crap I've been through. Pissed me off more than anything. I made a sour face. Now isn't that some shit? That getting tackled and held down while someone steals my blood isn't the worst thing to happen to me by far?
More than your share in a very short time, he replied.
Not quite sure what that says about me, I replied with a low snort. Shit magnet, that's what it says.
Well, you've handled yourself well every time, he said. I'll give you credit for that. The incident on Highway 1790 was damned impressive. A warm flush of pride went through me. Thanks. But speaking of that, is Heather doing all right? He seemed to consider the question carefully before answering. Yes.
That wasn't exactly a super reassuring response. She's really all right? I asked, cocking an eyebrow at him. I mean, I know she was working for the other side.
Dr. Nikas has treated her arm and head, Brian stated, features composed in the professional mask. She's healing fine.
And then what? What's going to happen to her?
I don't know yet, he replied.
There was a hitch in his voice that unsettled me. What would she have to do, or prove to you, to get y'all to... I paused, not quite sure how to say it. To keep y'all from doing bad stuff to her.
He didn't flinch at the accusation that Heather faced a very real threat of enhanced interrogation, yet worry flashed across his face, briefly cracking the professional facade.
I don't know,
he said, and to my surprise he seemed to wilt a smidge.
She's a difficult case.
She was unhappy enough with Saberton to risk everything to leave him, I reminded him. My own worry grew. Is she at the lab? Will I be able to see her?
He hesitated. I braced myself to be told it wasn't possible, and so it was with real surprise that I heard him say, I'll see if I can arrange it.
Thanks, I said, relieved that it wasn't a flat-out no. I glanced over at him. How long have you been a zombie?
A little over 15 years, he replied, quickly enough that it sounded like he was glad for the change in subject.
I controlled the desire to ask him how old he was. He looked like he was late 30s or maybe early 40s, so did that mean he was that old when he was turned?
Did a zombie stay the same physical age they were at when turned, or did the body stabilize at some optimum age? Was Pietro actually in his 60s when he became a zombie? And if that was the case, what would happen with a little kid who was turned? One of these days I would run out of questions about zombies.
Sure.
I guess you kind of have the hang of all this then, huh?
Brian's shoulders lifted in a slight shrug.
For the most part. Fortunately, I am in a situation where the people I work with know what I am.
He paused as he made a turn onto a narrow highway.
Having people around who understand makes it easier.
I bet it does, I said, then winced as I thought of the scene with my dad this morning. God, my dad would freak if he found out. I can't even imagine.
It would be ugly and messy, and I didn't want to think about that too much. We had enough issues between us without bringing up my weird medical condition.
It's hard to get past the ingrained prejudice, Brian said, eyes firmly on the road ahead of us. A lot of people can only see the monster, and those situations seldom end well. A muscle in his jaw twitched. Always have to be careful about revealing your nature. It can backfire even when you think they're sure to accept it.
Well, we are monsters, I said with a small sigh. Hard to sugarcoat that.
Brian gave a sober nod and didn't argue the point. There wasn't much more conversation after that. I sat back, listened to classic rock, and watched the scenery go by.
Chapter 14. Our route to the lab had been almost entirely back roads and seldom used highways, though I wasn't sure if that was the only way to get there, or if it was on purpose to keep me from finding the place again. If so, it worked, since I had no idea where the hell we were, other than in front of an incredibly uninteresting building. It looked nothing like a lab or secret outpost, or even a secret outpost cleverly disguised as a farmhouse, or anything far less boring than what it was. A cinder block lump of a structure, painted an institutional blue, with a small gravel parking lot, and only one door that I could see. Scraggly grass, scorched brown from summer heat, surrounded it, giving way to pine forest after a few hundred yards. Dust hung in the air from the Escalade's passage, and I held back a sneeze and a little disappointment with effort. Brian escorted me to the door and pressed a button beside it. I figured surely there were surveillance cameras, but I still hadn't located them by the time the lock on the door gave a click. Brian pulled the door open and I followed him into a room as massively unexciting as the exterior. Dull tan walls and a tired-looking couch, a coffee table with corners that were worn down to the particle board beneath the veneer,
a single door on the far wall. It looked and felt like the waiting room at the public health clinic, right down to the scattered pile of ancient magazines on the table and a faint smell of antiseptic. I ruthlessly fought back increasing disappointment and crossed mental fingers that the lab itself wouldn't be so crashingly mundane. Brian took a seat on the couch, snagged a magazine off the table as if expecting a bit of a wait. I went ahead and sat at the other end of the couch and picked up a magazine as well. Golf Digest, from 7 years ago. And a quick scan of the table showed me I had the pick of the lot. What I wouldn't give for some highlights and some good old Goofus and Gallant. Yeah, that was more my speed. Fortunately, it was only about 10 minutes before the door opened and an unimposing man stepped through. His brown shoulder-blade length hair was pulled back in a ponytail. A hint of gray at his temples added a sense of years to his unwrinkled face. In addition, my failure to smell an edible brain behind that face told me he was a zombie. He wasn't wearing a lab coat, name badge, or anything like that, but I had no doubt at all that he was Dr. Nikus. He confirmed it when he looked to me with a smile and said, "Hello, Angel. I am Ariston Nikus." He had an interesting accent, nothing I could identify for sure, but maybe a mix of various European influences. I dropped the magazine back onto the table, stood and shook his hand. "Nice to meet you, sir."
"A pleasure to meet you," he replied with genuine warmth in his voice. "I've heard a lot about you."
He released my hand and turned to the door.
"Come this way."
I could only imagine all the stuff that had been said about me lately. I followed him into a short corridor, painted in the same drab tan as the waiting room, while Brian fell in behind. Dr. Nikus paused at a door at the end of the corridor, punched in numbers on a keypad, then swiped his thumb on a sensor. A second later, the door unlocked with a click. We entered a barren cubicle of a room that did nothing to raise my hopes for anything beyond boring and mundane. Dr. Nikus gave a smile and wave to the mirrored window of the right wall, where I suspected a security guard or two watched from behind it. He crossed to the single broad door on the far wall and did the keypad thumb swipe thing again. With a click and hiss, the door, at least 3 inches thick, slid quietly into the wall on the left. To my relief and utter delight, we left drab tan behind and stepped into an area that totally looked like a super cool zombie research lab straight out of a science fiction movie. Or rather, we weren't actually in the lab yet. I could see that awesomeness through the double glass doors ahead, but it wasn't kill me now tan anymore. Corridors led off left and right, painted in graduated shades of rich blue and gold, lit by recessed lighting, and several panels of lights with associated digital readouts twinkled beside the door ahead. And it smelled fresh. Not like fresh scent dryer sheets or anything fake like that, but more like the air right after a lightning strike.
"I'll meet up with you later, Angel," Brian said.
I gave him a smile and a nod, and he turned down the corridor to the right while I continued after Dr. Nikus.
"You are interested in the people I have in stasis, John Kang in particular, yes?"
he asked as we passed through the auto-sliding glass security doors, thick glass that I had no doubt could stop a bullet. I liked that Dr. Nikus referred to them as people and not simply heads. "That's right," I replied, looking around and taking it all in, utterly fascinated. "Thanks for taking the time to show me around. I really appreciate it."
"Not a problem," he said over his shoulder. "I don't have many visitors. You are a breath of fresh air."
We passed into what felt like the central hub of the complex, and it was definitely a complex. This room was large and circular with a high domed ceiling. Several passageways and doors led out, leading to the hub effect, and all sorts of shiny equipment lined the counters and walls. A semicircular central island housed several fancy computer stations and more equipment I couldn't begin to identify. I wasn't any sort of expert on labs, but it was pretty obvious no expense had been spared, not only on mega-cool equipment, but also on making it a comfortable workspace. Various screens and little flashy lights looked cool as hell, but the whirs, ticks, and soft pings made the place feel alive. Dr. Nikus ran his hand lightly over a console as we passed it on our way toward a dark corridor on the far side, and I had the feeling he spent a lot of time here. lights came on automatically as we entered a hallway with walls covered in a tile mosaic of colorful abstract patterns. Dr. Nikas turned and walked backwards as he spoke.
While you are here, would you consider giving some blood?
I almost jerked to a stop, and in fact, stumbled a half step before recovering.
What?
I asked, suddenly very wary. Why? He stopped, apparently sensing my alarm.
In general, I try to keep samples of everyone's blood on hand for research or unique individual needs, he said. And specifically in your case, to determine the reason Saberton wanted his samples so desperately.
It made sense, but still. Can I say no? He seemed surprised by the question, but he didn't hesitate before answering.
Of course.
Dr. Nikas sure seemed nice enough, but right now there was too much of a yikes factor going on with me to be cool about giving my blood away.
Let me think about it, okay?
A brief flash of disappointment touched his face, though it didn't seem to be, crap, I'm not getting my way. It was more like, darn, it would have been really nice to have that. But he smiled and gave me an understanding nod.
Certainly, not a problem.
He moved to a side door and unlocked it.
Come on in and see King.
I followed, relieved that he wasn't pushing the issue. The chilly temperature and small size of the room reminded me of walking into the morgue cooler, and it took a moment for my eyes to adjust to the dim light. A half dozen vats like oversized stainless steel crock pots lined a counter against the far wall, each with a white index card taped to the front. Dr. Nikas twisted a knob on the wall near the door and increased the light level a bit.
They do best in low light, he said,
moving to the vat second from the left.
This is John King. You can look through the glass lid, but remember that though he looks really bad, his brain is fully encapsulated by the parasite and is stable.
He paused, considering.
Hibernating might be a way of looking at it, using minimal resources.
Upon approach, I saw that the index card on the vat read, John Kang, in flowing handwriting that I had no doubt belonged to Dr. Nikas. Something about that personal touch gave me the feeling that he really cared about these heads as individuals, and not simply as test subjects. Curiosity burning, I peered through the glass. Sure enough, it was Kang. Despite the head looking like a horror movie prop suspended in some sort of clear gel, I vaguely recognized his features. Like mummy wrappings, strips of cloth bound the stump of his neck, and his skin, though not falling apart in decay, was dark, ugly gray, and shriveled like a raisin. That is so gross. And cool, I breathed. Dr. Nikas smiled broadly.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree on both counts, he said.
I'm currently analyzing research data that may well solve the puzzle of the regrowth medium, as well as boost our alternative brains research.
I tore my gaze from the gruesome sight, looked over at him. Alternative brains? You mean fake brains like Dr. Cherish and Sophia were working on?
All of their data fed my research, he said, nodding.
A shadow of deep concern passed over his face.
I am close, so very close. But in light of some recent information, I am deeply troubled that Saberton may be near as well.
I pushed away from Kang's vat and moved to another.
Well, what would be so bad about that?
I asked. I mean, I know they're assholes. I paused. Serious, major fucking assholes. But as long as someone develops an alternative, it's all good, right?
Oh, God, no.
Dr. Nikas replied, a hint of alarm in his voice.
Any non-zombie group developing them first would be bad. Saberton developing them first would be disastrous.
He shook his head.
A brain's alternative is the holy grail for zombies, a salvation, the freedom to choose not to eat people.
He continued.
In the hands of those who hold no love for our kind, it would be a means of control and manipulation.
He exhaled, ran a hand over his hair.
Saberton could use that to their advantage against us. And if they have a brain's alternative and we don't, we're, well, screwed.
But wouldn't we still be able to get brains the old-fashioned way?
I asked. I mean, the way we do now at morgues and funeral homes? His eyes met mine.
Not if, or rather not when, they go public with what we are, and who we are, he said. We managed to feed our people well with the network in place Tao. Enough people died to meet our needs. His mouth pursed. Yet, do you think the public would allow any of us to work in the morgues and funeral homes, knowing that the brains of their loved ones would become our dinner? And that's putting aside what the majority reaction would be to the knowledge that there are monsters in their midst. A shiver ran through me. I'd seen enough redneck prejudice to know exactly what the outcome would be. Well, that sucks.
Yes, it does, he agreed, then gave me a faint smile. Come on, he said, heading for the door. It's freezing in here, and the conversation topic doesn't help.
He dimmed the light before exiting with me into the warmer hallway.
Fortunately, I've made some breakthroughs with respect to conducting research on non-zombie test subjects, which is important since it doesn't risk crippling or disrupting the parasite in a true zombie.
That's what happened to Philip, I said, smugly pleased that I'd guessed correctly back when Cherish messed him up. I even told Philip so at the time, but he was too busy trying to kill me to listen.
Dr. Nikus nodded. Experimental food combined with parasite stimulants. A very ugly cocktail for a zombie. Long-term effects on the parasite.
What does that mean for the two he made? I asked.
Tim Bell and Roland? I ran into them at the gourmet gala. I made a sour face as I remembered that fun encounter. Bell was screwed up and confused, I continued. At one point he grabbed cake instead of brains, and then it got ugly.
I don't know, Angel, he said, looking sincerely troubled. I've never seen a case like it, and I don't have much to go on other than Brian's report of the incident. Bizarre, erratic behavior. I would need to run tests on them. I bit my lower lip as I thought.
You know, I had to maul the hell out of Philip to turn him, I said, remembering how horribly natural it had felt. The whole thing took a while, maybe 15 minutes at least, and Marcus told me that's the way it's supposed to be. Dr. Nikus gave a nod of agreement, and I went on. But Philip turned those two in a couple of minutes with one or two deep bites. Did it have something to do with the parasite stimulant Cherish gave him along with the fake brains?
Dr. Nikus smiled.
Exactly what I concluded based on what I knew. I am quite certain their parasite is crippled.
Then he exhaled, smile fading. Impulsive creation of zombies, especially damaged ones, is not good for our kind. Very risky on many levels. Those two are poster children for why I don't test alternative brains on true zombies.
That reminded me of Dr. Nikus's early comment about breakthroughs using non-zombie test subjects.
Wait, you have regular humans eat fake brains? I made an ew face.
Oh, heavens no, he said, and made just as much of an ew face. At least, I would never do that.
There is a way to cause a regular human to adopt various aspects of the zombie biochemistry, mimicking zombie traits for short periods without actual introduction of the parasite. Quite fascinating, really. I have a small number of volunteers from our people with whom I work. Some employees, some family members of zombies.
That's pretty damn nice of them to volunteer for a study that won't directly benefit them, I said.
It is, he agreed.
But they'll truly believe it's for everyone's benefit to find an acceptable alternate for brains.
Made sense. I could totally see myself volunteering if it was my dad who was the zombie.
However, he added, it's important that they be monitored closely, since it can be dangerous to mimic the parasite activity for too long. It limits our work somewhat, but I would have it no other way.
Yep, I definitely like Dr. Nikus. We re-entered the main lab area, and I continued to shamelessly gawk at everything. Maybe after I got my GED, I could start taking some college classes in biology or something like that. I mean, why the hell not? I needed to start looking beyond the next decade or so.
Pietro told me you were tranquilized last night, but that it was different from your previous experience of being tranked, Dr. Nikus said. He peered at me with naked curiosity. Would you mind sharing your experience?
I wouldn't mind at all,
I said, then proceeded to tell him everything, including how I'd gone completely unconscious, the brain's tasting awful for a while, and the injuries not healing at first. As I spoke, Dr. Nikas's eyes took on a faraway look, as if he either wasn't paying attention or was deeply processing what I'd told him. I was fairly sure it was the latter, and I remained quiet after I finished. After a moment, his gaze came back to me.
This is new. It seems as though Saberton has found a way to effectively tranquilize the parasite without damaging it. Hence the lack of healing, even with the brains available, and the temporary revulsion to brains.
That's bad, huh? I put the pieces together. Bad mainly because you can't do it too, and also probably because you don't have an antidote since it's new. He gave me a sharp look, and I had the feeling he liked that I'd put it together.
Yes, exactly. The ability to tranquilize the parasite could be extremely useful in research or even ongoing zombie care, he said, expression going grim. And if Saberton or others have this strength, and we don't have an antidote, well, it's extremely dangerous.
I pursed my lips. Would it really help you to have some of my blood? Surprised relief shone in his eyes, and he gave me a simple grave nod.
Yes, it would. At the minimum, we are currently at a disadvantage because they have samples of your blood and I don't. And I don't know why they wanted your blood, which puts us at even more of a disadvantage.
He exhaled.
Plus, if there is even a trace of the trank remaining, it could be invaluable.
All right, then, I said. I'll give you some. Because I really don't want those fuckers to have any advantage.
Angel, I know you don't know me, Dr. Nikas said, face and voice serious. But I give you my word that I won't use your blood against you in any way.
I appreciate that, I said.
Thank you for offering it.
He smiled, then looked up as Brian came in.
Angel, come with me, Brian said, expression locked and fully professional, with an added hint of grim.
Okay, sure thing, I replied. The grimness bothered me, and I had a feeling it didn't mean good things for Heather. I returned my attention to Dr. Nikas, even as Brian pivoted and headed back down the hallway. Thanks for showing me around, I said. This has been really neat.
It was my pleasure, Angel, he replied. I'll have one of my techs take your blood before you leave.
With a last quick nod, I turned and hurried after Brian. I caught up with him easily, then followed him into an area that was obviously set up for medical purposes. A crash cart sat against the wall in the corridor, and a glass-doored cabinet containing drugs and various supplies stood beside a long built-in desk. A pale, thin man with dark hair and wearing faded blue scrubs sat at a computer workstation making notes from a series of graphs on the screen. An intricate origami dragon perched atop the monitor. The man lifted his head as we approached. I watched as Brian met his startlingly expressive hazel eyes and gave an almost imperceptible shake of his head before continuing on. A muscle in the other man's jaw leaped, and his lips pressed together before he returned his attention to the computer, typing with greater than necessary force.
Brian, that guy didn't look very happy, I said as soon as we were further down the hall. What's going on?
I can't say that I've ever seen Jock look happy, but he has reason today.
He opened a door, stepped into a small wood-paneled office, and gestured me in. A compact computer sat on a side countertop with a chair tucked under it. A second chair at the end of the counter gave me the impression that this was a consultation room of some sort. I entered, and he closed the door behind me, still maintaining the stoic and professional air, though I thought I noted a few more cracks in the surface. Then I saw the hole in the wall, with fresh blood on splinters of wood. My gaze went to Brian's hands, and I spied flecks of red on his white cuff. No sign of damage to his hand now, but there were two empty brain packets on the desk. Brian didn't seem at all the type to have wall punching as part of his normal response to dealing with captives. This situation with Heather really seemed to be messing with him.
I guess it's not looking so good for her, I said.
Leaning back against the desk, he shook his head.
No, he said. She's lying. What info she's given us checks out. But she's sticking to the story that she's just a photographer with the Saberton PR department.
Brian's expression went even more grim, though I hadn't thought it was possible.
That matches what's in their official employment records.
So what's the problem?
I tugged a hand through my hair. If it checked out, why was her being Saberton PR a bad thing? She was sure as hell taking pictures of me.
Then again, for a photographer, she handled herself pretty damn well in the highway fight.
I don't understand. Who do you think she is?
Brian exhaled forcefully. All I know for certain right now is that she's not just a PR staffer, and she's not coming clean about it.
Frustration colored his voice.
I had a talk with her while you were with Dr. Nikas. Played her a bit, and found out she knows a little too much about the late Richard Saber. He folded his arms over his chest. You see, he was a recluse in his last decade. However, Heather let slip about an eye patch the man wore after a bout of cancer. That's something no lower echelon employee would know, and I only know it because of a single photo one of our operatives managed to get of him.
He flexed his right hand, mouth tightening.
Damn it, Angel. It's not definitive, but when I put it together with the info she's dribbled, and what I smell from her, it's pretty damning. I could see his point, and my heart sank.
So this whole thing is a ploy to infiltrate Pietro's operation?
That's what it's looking like, he said. She kept her cool after her comment on Saber, but I smelled the fear on her. She knew she'd screwed up.
I had no doubt he'd been tagged on brains when he talked to her, which means he'd be able to smell a flea fart.
So what did she say to cover herself? Brian shook his head. She didn't. I walked out to, do some remodeling, he said with a glance at the hole in the wall, then went to find you. No more talking for now, I'll let her sweat. I frowned, remembering my conversation with Heather in the diner parking lot.
It doesn't make sense, I insisted, though I knew that it was more that I didn't want to believe it.
Can I talk to her?
I'm sorry. The situation has changed, Angel, he said, voice tight. Frustration tightened the skin around his eyes. He didn't want to believe it any more than I did, but what the hell else was he supposed to think?
Yeah, I know, but...
I paused, took a deep breath. She saved my life, and she didn't have to. I'd already taken out the two humans, and she could have waited for the zombie to blow my head off before taking him out. She'd have been home free then. But she didn't. I scowled. And on a totally personal level, if she's bullshitting us, I'd kinda like to confront her because I killed a guy for her. I wasn't a wimp when it came to fighting. I'd had to do plenty to survive. But killing took it to another level. I'm not real happy about that. I just want to know why.
It's not an if she's bullshitting, Brian stated. She is, and she called you into it.
He shook his head. She's a pro, Angel. I don't know how she did it, but she managed to get personal information from Dr. Nikas, Jacques, Reg, Dr. Nikas's other tech, and me. Stuff we don't talk about, ever. But each one of us spilled it in conversation and didn't.
He stopped, exhaled.
Add that to what's stacked in the infiltration corner, and I'm not sending in a visitor right now.
Brian, there has to be more to it, I said, not at all willing to leave it like this, despite the evidence against her. You didn't see her out there, I met his eyes. Please, maybe I can get through to her.
His eyes narrowed. What do you mean by not seeing her out there?
I hesitated, trying to think how to put it. It's tough to explain. We were a team. I mean, it wasn't just me helping her out of a fix, I said with a shake of my head. Brian, I just can't believe she's a bad person. I saw her after she killed the zombie. She looked really torn up about it. He seemed to be willing to let me keep talking, so I took that as a sign I might be getting somewhere. I tilted my head. Look, what do you have to lose by letting me in to see her? It's not as if she can ferret out any super secret info from me. I gave him a small smile. We all know I don't know shit. He regarded me for a long, silent moment. I braced myself to be all kinds of stubborn when he said no, but when he finally spoke, he wore a hint of a smile.
I suppose I have nothing to lose, and maybe everything to gain.
Exactly, I said brightly as relief flooded in. Thanks, Brian.
She's a con artist, and a good one, he said. I hate to see you getting...
He stopped, visibly rephrased.
I hate to see you wasting your time.
I had a feeling he was going to say something about getting more attached to her.